Joseph Priestley was born in 1733 near Leeds, England. His parents were dissenters, religious people who were not followers of the Church of England. When his mother died, an aunt who was a devout Calvinist raised him. Early on, he could flawlessly recite all 107 questions and answers of the Westminster Shorter Catechism. He learned Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, and later French. At age 11, he trapped spiders in sealed jars and wondered why they died. This began his life's journey in science. Meanwhile, he began questioning Orthodox religion. At age 16, he became seriously ill and believed he was dying. Raised as a devout Calvinist, he believed a conversion experience was necessary for salvation, but doubted he had had one. This emotional distress eventually led him to question his theological upbringing, caused him to reject the church doctrine that God would decide who is saved, and to follow instead universal salvation, that all people could be saved. He declined to go to an Orthodox boys' school and went to a school in Daventry, where the free exchange of ideas was encouraged. Here he prepared for the ministry as a rational dissenter, a point of view which emphasized the rational analysis of the natural world and of the Bible. Due to his nonconforming views, Priestley's first stint as a minister was, shall we say, short-lived. However, friends got him a new position in Cheshire where he was well-received and he began tutoring children. This provided him additional income to purchase basic scientific apparatus for his experiments. He also began writing on various topics. One of his first books, The Rudiments of English Grammar, was, in fact, the first one to systematically map the structure of the English language with the same rigor that scholars had applied to Latin and Greek. The book became popular and led him to the post of tutor at the Warrington Academy, a prominent dissenting school where he introduced innovative curriculum on modern history and politics and did not teach to the test. During this time, he also met and married his wife, Mary Wilkinson, and as an aside, Bob Wilkinson and I are trying to figure out if we can find a cousin connection there. One of these days, we probably will. Using the state-of-the-art scientific equipment of the time, an air pump, a well-calibrated scale, and a machine that created static electricity, Priestley became a dabbler in natural philosophy. He was aware of Benjamin Franklin's work with electricity and became especially interested in knowing more about it. At the London Coffee House, which was a typical meeting place before Starbucks, he met Dr. Franklin, the world's most celebrated electrician, as such scientists were then called, and met many of the leading thinkers and dissenters of London. They called themselves the Honest Whigs and met for informal discussions of science and politics over food and drink. He was among some of his heroes and was warmly received. There was a free sharing of information and ideas. Priestley realized that there was no book setting forth the history and knowledge about electricity. He proposed writing one, and his new friends agreed to open their libraries to him and support his endeavor. Franklin and others also encouraged the younger Priestley to continue with his own experiments. Priestley returned home and began conducting more electricity experiments. He learned that charcoal, water, and metal were good conductors of electricity. Priestley's research culminated in a 700-page book entitled The History and Present State of Electricity with Original Experiments. This catapulted him to the elite of the electricians of the day. The impact of the book on science was electrifying. Couldn't resist. Written in English, it became widely available. It provided both history and current experiments others could do and expand upon. His was the first book of science to encourage the advancement of science by recognizing that the importance of current discoveries is that it's the foundation of future ones. To Priestley, science was not stagnant or limited, but a never-ending effort toward betterment. This concept was an important contribution of Priestley to the Age of Enlightenment and to the advancement of science. His book became the principal text on electricity for the next 100 years, including being part of the standard natural philosophy curriculum at Yale. It was the text relied upon by future scientists like Michael Faraday and James Maxwell, as well as Alessandro Volta, the inventor of the battery, and William Herschel, discoverer of infrared radiation. Priestley's book was also the source for widely popularizing Franklin's kite experiment, as Franklin had published only a short article about it, but generously shared all of his research and papers with Priestley, who recounted the experiment with great enthusiasm. As a result of these writings, Priestley was made a member of England's Royal Society, the apogee of English natural philosophy, where only 60 years earlier, Sir Isaac Newton was president of that society. In 1767, Priestley returned to Leeds to preach, write, and continue his scientific endeavors. His home was next to a brewery that emitted what was then called mephitic air, what we now know as carbon dioxide. With lots of free CO2 at his disposal, Priestley experimented prodigiously with it and led him to discover the process for creating carbonated beverages, just like Linda was sharing with the children. And in fact, we do have Joseph Priestley to thank for soda water, soda pop, sparkling cider, and similar beverages. His best-known scientific work, though, was his discovery of dephlogisticated air, and I'll spell that afterwards if you want it. The word phlogiston derives from the ancient Greek word for fire and was an attempt to explain the mystery of why things burn. The theory prevalent at the time was that as things burn, they release phlogiston in the air, and the air was considered to be phlogisticated. What Priestley did was to isolate the air. He did so by placing a mint plant and a lit candle under sealed glass until the candle burned out. The sealed glass was allowed to receive sunshine for 10 days, and then, by concentrating the sun's rays on the candle's tip, he was able to relight the candle as though it was now surrounded with fresh air, as indeed it was. We were going to replicate the experiment, but none of us thought you'd want to stay here for 10 days to see the result. He repeated this experiment in several variations. What he had discovered was later named oxygen and photosynthesis. His writings on this discovery were freely shared with others. Franklin observed that Priestley's work was a key to understanding the cycle of life on Earth. While ecosystem as a term would not be coined until the 1930s, Priestley is considered to be the first person to have demonstrated its existence. His work with air led to the discovery of numerous other gases. And in 1772, the Royal Society honored Priestley with his Copley Medal, the most prestigious scientific prize of the day. The following year, Priestley was hired as a tutor by Lord Shelburne, a future Prime Minister of England. This gave Priestley extensive leisure time to continue his philosophical and religious writings, as well as to partake in various additional scientific experiments. Priestley had previously written an essay on the first principle of democracy, where he addressed the importance of having the separation of church and state. He observed that such separation was critical to the development of free thought and scientific advancement. In 1774, at Franklin's urging, Priestley wrote a pamphlet entitled Protestant Dissenters of All Denominations, that specifically focused on supporting liberty and freedom for the American colonist. Priestley became one of England's most outspoken supporters of the American cause, which earned him condemnation from many English notables. Excuse me, I brought my grandsons with me. For the next decade, though, Priestley turned his writings toward religious matters. He assisted another minister and friend, the Reverend Theophilus Lindsay, in founding the first official Unitarian denomination in England. At the time, England's Test and Corporations Acts prohibited anyone from holding office who dissented from the 39 Articles of Faith of the Church of England. This included Unitarians who denied both the divinity of Jesus Christ and the existence of the Trinity. in his three-volume work, Institutes of Natural and Revealed Religion, Priestley set forth his belief that a divine being acts in accordance with necessary metaphysical laws. The only revealed religious truths that could be accepted were those that match one's own experience in the natural world. Not surprisingly, this publication shocked and appalled the followers of the Church of England, as it challenged basic Christian orthodoxies, including the miracle of the virgin birth. Priestley responded by analogizing to his scientific research. Quote, expose as many ideas as possible to as many minds as possible, and the system will ultimately gravitate toward truth and consensus. It was Priestley's view that science and reason would eventually lead people to see Jesus as being part of humanity and not the divinity of God. Another important result of Priestley's work on gases was his six-volume treatise entitled Experiments and Observations on Different Kinds of Airs. These experiments put to rest the last vestiges of the theory that the world was composed of four elements, earth, water, fire, and air. In 1779, the Priestleys moved to Birmingham, England, where the Industrial Revolution was revving up. Priestley's brother-in-law was a successful ironmaster and formed a group along with fellow industrialists, including James Watt of steam engine fame, to sponsor Priestley so that he could continue his scientific work. His supporters included Charles Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, and they were part of the Lunar Society, so named because they met when there was a full moon, which enabled night travel back home. Many times he did work which was beneficial to his supporters' commercial activities, sort of an early R&D department. One person he did not see any longer was his much older friend, Benjamin Franklin, who had by then become America's ambassador to France. Franklin always held Priestley in the highest regard. In fact, he successfully lobbied the French Academy of Science to make Priestley, and Franklin too, one of the few foreign members of that academy at that time. Priestley took occasional trips to London where he enjoyed visits with his old friends. One time he got to meet and talk with America's ambassador, John Adams. In his diary, Adams wrote of that encounter, quote, I spent the day upon the whole agreeably enough. Seeds were sown this day, which will grow. How prophetic were his words. In 1782, Priestley published a major two-volume work entitled The History of the Corruptions of Christianity. He considered this his most valuable writing ever, though I doubt it will be so noted in textbooks adopted by the Texas School Board. In this history, Priestley described in great detail how the teachings of the early Christian church had been corrupted or distorted. He addressed issues ranging from the divinity of Christ to the proper form of the Lord's Supper. Four years later, Priestley published a related book entitled A History of Early Opinions Concerning Jesus Christ, compiled from original writers, proving that the Christian church was at first Unitarian. Thomas Jefferson, who authored the Jefferson Bible, later noted the profound effect that Priestley's two history books had had on him. He wrote, quote, I have read the corruptions of Christianity and the early opinions of Jesus over and over again, and I rest on them as the basis for my own faith. While well-received by his fellow dissenters, Priestley was loudly condemned by many others, especially for his rejection of the Trinity. He responded in several pamphlets. In words that would boil over into a national debate, he challenged his readers to enact change by writing the following, quote, Let us not, therefore, be discouraged, though for the present we should see no great number of churches professedly Unitarian. We are, as it were, laying gunpowder, grain by grain, under the old building of error and superstition, which a single spark may hereafter inflame, so as to produce an instantaneous explosion, in consequence of which that edifice, the erection of which has been the work of ages, may be overturned in a moment, and so effectively as that the same foundation can never be built upon again. This statement led to Priestley being labeled Gunpowder Joe. Many of his opponents deemed it a call for revolution in the midst of the neighboring French Revolution. English pamphleteers then stepped up their attacks on Priestley. Priestley's opponents were concerned that his outspoken support for the French Revolution could lead to a revolution at home against the King of England. For the royalists, Priestley became the flashpoint for all that was wrong with the views of the free-thinking dissenters. This conflict came to a head on July 14, 1791, when the dissenters planned a dinner in Birmingham to celebrate Bastille Day. The royalists had formed a group called the Church and King Movement, supported by the establishment and composed largely of working-class men who were hostile to any form of change. Priestley and others received word that the dinner would likely be disrupted. The owner of the hotel, not wanting to lose business, persuaded the dinner planners to hold the dinner 3 hours earlier. Yeah. Priestley was advised to stay home, which he did. When the mob arrived, only to discover that they were too late, they became enraged. They went first to the dissenters' new meeting house and then the old meeting house and burned both to the ground. Meanwhile, friends rushed off to Priestley's home, told them of the mob, and helped them to flee for their own safety. The mob eventually made their way to the Priestley's home, which they destroyed by burning everything, his home, laboratory, library, and all of his writings. Some 3 days later, at the king's belated request, order was restored, but not before more than a dozen homes and churches had been destroyed. Most historians have concluded that the king's delay in restoring order was a deliberate decision. Family then moved to London for greater safety. The destruction made sensational news in England and abroad. Close friends rallied to Priestley's aid. French chemist Antoine Lavoisier, who gave the deflagisticated air the name oxygen, offered to restore Priestley's laboratory. The French legislature made Priestley an honorary citizen of France. Vice President John Adams sent a letter of support from America in which he compared Priestley to Socrates. Despite this support from abroad, daily life became more difficult for the Priestley family. Priestley was burned in effigy. Vicious political cartoons were common, and many Royal Academy of friends distanced themselves from him. In 1793, Priestley's son immigrated to Pennsylvania and wrote back about having available land near two branches of the Susquehanna River. Now, that's easy for me to say. 150 miles northwest of Philadelphia. The following year, Joseph and his wife sailed to America. Ever the scientist, Priestley duplicated Benjamin Franklin's work some 20 years earlier on a similar Atlantic crossing. Priestley frequently measured the temperature of the ocean as the ship sailed to America. He confirmed Franklin's results. There was indeed a warm current flowing from America towards England, something Franklin named the Gulf Stream. Upon the ship's arrival in New York Harbor, word quickly spread that the Priestleys were on board. Governor Clinton, a different Clinton, urged them to stay in New York. Adams wrote a letter encouraging Priestley to settle in Boston, where he would be warmly received. New York papers published solemn declarations of support, with one stating, quote, "The name of Joseph Priestley will be long remembered among all enlightened people." Nonetheless, Priestleys went on to Philadelphia, where, according to Priestley's account, they were met with the most flattering attentions from all persons of note. He dined with President Washington, cemented a friendship with Dr. Benjamin Rush, and also attended a special meeting of the American Philosophical Society, of which Priestley was already a member, thanks to the society's late founder, Benjamin Franklin. Jefferson, who was then in Monticello, wrote a letter expressing regret that he was unable to be present at the meeting. While in Philadelphia, Priestley gave a series of sermons and helped found America's first Unitarian Church, the First Unitarian Church of Philadelphia, which is still going strong in downtown Philadelphia. He turned down an offer to teach chemistry at the University of Pennsylvania. Instead, he began building a home in Northumberland on the land his son had acquired, and where he could retire and continue his scientific endeavors in peace and quiet. However, his solitude did not last long. A pro-British pamphleteer, William Cobbett, published a broadside accusing Priestley of treason against Britain and attempted to undermine his scientific credibility. Priestley was also caught up in the split between President Adams and Vice President Jefferson, who took office in 1798 in Philadelphia. Priestley's view of the world was decidedly against the Federalists, so his friendship with Adams began to wane, while his friendship with Jefferson greatly increased. Priestley wrote that the government's limited resources would be far better spent supporting libraries and laboratories rather than building up a navy and army to deal with foreign matters. Man ahead of his time. Priestley began writing articles on American politics, many of which were published by his neighbor and editor of the Northumberland Gazette, Thomas Cooper. Priestley also wrote several letters to a fellow Unitarian minister, George Thatcher, in which Priestley stridently criticized Adams. In 1798, as tensions grew between the Federalists led by Alexander Hamilton and the agrarian Republicans led by Thomas Jefferson, Adams signed into law the notorious Alien and Sedition Acts. The acts authorized the government to deport any non-citizen, quote, dangerous to the peace and safety of the United States, and to arrest anyone who published, quote, false, scandalous, and malicious writing about the government. Letters by Priestley and critical of Adams, as well as a packet of intercepted letters sent to Priestley from a British radical, again found their way to Mr. Cobbett, who wasted no time in publishing them. Priestley's friend, Thomas Cooper, vigorously defended Priestley and ultimately published an article setting forth the abuses of the Adams presidency. Adams was urged to have both Cooper and Priestley arrested under the new law. Adams did so as to Cooper, but after much reflection on his earlier friendship with Priestley and considering Priestley's advanced age, Adams rejected the request to arrest Priestley. Priestley did write a response to the inflammatory charges against him, noting his long-standing support for the colonies and his important friendship and collaboration with Benjamin Franklin. Rather than being a spy or traitor, Priestley had come to America voluntarily, seeking the promised freedom of the new land and to help it live up to its founding principles. He had become the first great scientist to seek refuge in America due to being persecuted for his political and religious beliefs. When Jefferson took office as president in 1801, he wrote to Priestley upon hearing he had been seriously ill. In the letter, Jefferson wrote, quote, I sincerely rejoice that you are recovering. Yours is one of the few lives precious to mankind and for the continuance of which every thinking man, person, is solicitous. Priestley and Jefferson maintained an ongoing correspondence, with Jefferson urging Priestley to move to Virginia where the weather would better suit his ailing condition. However, Priestley politely declined. While his health deteriorated, he remained prolific to the end. In 1803, he published four new volumes on the general history of the Christian Church. A few days before his death in 1804, Priestley wrote a friend to tell Mr. Jefferson that, quote, I think myself happy to have lived so long under his excellent administration and that I have a prospect of dying in it. It is, I am confident, the best on the face of the earth, and yet I hope it will rise to something more excellent. Priestley was buried in a Quaker cemetery in Northumberland. Many tributes followed. His last home is made an historical landmark. Statues and plaques in his honor can be found in Birmingham, Leeds, and elsewhere. It was some 8 years later that Dr. Benjamin Rush encouraged Adams and Jefferson to put their disagreements behind them. They began with a polite exchange of letters about their respective families and eventually discussed at great length many of the political issues they had seen over the preceding 50 years. As Priestley had been a friend of both and was considered by many to be the embodiment of the Age of Enlightenment, it is no wonder that they wrote of him 52 separate times. The importance of Joseph Priestley cannot be overstated. For example, the contemporary view of intellectual progress is dominated by one book, Thomas Kuhn's The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, published in 1962. and from which the then new conventional terms paradigm and paradigm shift originate. In his book, Kuhn credits Joseph Priestley with the paradigm shift that has since led to the most significant advances in chemistry. Some consider Priestley to be the father of modern chemistry. While not the absolute proof of this significance, I know that the Science Channel ranks Priestley's air experiment as number one in its list of the 100 greatest chemistry experiments in history. Priestley's research and his more than 150 published writings had an enormous impact on his contemporaries and successors in science, philosophy, liberty, politics, and religion. As Unitarian Universalists, we should all be proud and grateful for Joseph Priestley. I certainly am. Thank you.